Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy Wednesday, June 25th, 2025, to everybody. This is Chase of the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast, but we're not talking about college basketball today. We're going to be talking about college football and very exciting special guest, maybe one of the most famous Trojan posters on the internet, Upper West Side Trojan, has agreed to give an exclusive interview to the podcast, or just come on and talk football. So Upper West Side, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
You're welcome, Jason.
Okay, well, let's jump right into it. You had mentioned to me offline you had you'd recently gotten the Phil Steele annual, which I didn't even know was available yet, but it is. And you've obviously been looking into a lot of this stuff. So we're going to just jump right into it. The way kind of USC team is going to look this year, or the way you anticipate them looking, and the top challenges the team faces, and all the kind of accompanying issues. So let's start with what areas are of the team, putting aside for a second, what do you think we'd be most improved or biggest concern? What area are you kind of going to be most looking to, maybe in the first two games, which are against lesser opponents? What might you be more focused on in those games? What area of the team?
You know, I think the big question mark this year is the offensive line. I mean, there are other areas, but I'll just say that's the one area of concern, maybe optimism, you know, with having a new O-line coach that possibly could be a lot better, but there are a lot of unknowns with it because got a couple of new transfer guys coming in who are supposedly good players, some other younger guys that were moderately high level recruits that I pretty much know for a fact that USC wanted, even if they were not all rated as the 4 and 5 star type player. So there's some talent there. And then the issue is also, I worry about with that is kind of the depth. You know, this like the second string hasn't played very much. It's a relatively new O-line. It is experienced in some ways. So that's the thing I'm going to be looking to most. I think it kind of makes or breaks the season because I do like a lot of the other positions and I feel a little bit more sure about most of them. But the O-line is an interesting thing to look at.
So, okay, so Josh Henson, who had been the O-line coach since Lincoln Riley took over, is gone. He got a lot of criticism, especially from fans online, about the performance of the O-line, probably after season one. I think season one, there was general praise for him, but as time went on, he was getting criticized. And, you know, he was kind of coming from two fronts. One front was the performance of the O-line in certain circumstances. It's times it would be short yardage, needing crucial yards, needing a surge from the offensive line, not necessarily getting it. And then this past season, obviously, there was just a big concern with the pass protection, which was certainly beginning of the year really, really bad. And then the other side he was getting hit on a lot was the recruiting side. And I think on that front, you know, the criticism, you know, does seem somewhat justified. So the move was made to essentially we're moving on from Josh Henson, who, by the way, not only was the offensive line coach, but Lincoln Riley gave him the title, even though he's not the real offensive coordinator. He gave him the title of offensive coordinator. And now we're moving on to kind of a younger offensive line coach with a similar name, Hansen, who was coaching, you know, was assistant for the offensive line, but was also coaching tight ends the past few seasons. So People seem to be generally happier about the transition. Maybe it's that's because Hansen, who's younger, has recruited better. I am not 100% sure that Hansen is a better actual football coach of the offensive line than Henson. What are your thoughts about just that move?
I don't like to just go with what works best today. I have to try to tell the truth a little bit. With Henson, I was actually a moderate fan of his. I had seen his track record in the past, and he had kind of an old school philosophy, meaning like he'd be at a program for 3 or 4 years, and they would be kind of bad the first year. A little bit better the second year with virtually maybe like a very young O-line, a lot of sophomores in 1 year. Then they're all juniors the next year, and then they're seniors. And they would kind of go from usually being not very good to being pretty good and then being great after they were sort of 3 year starters. I noticed that it happened to him a couple times in his career. And I said, oh, this is a guy who knows how to work with players long term. And it'll work out really well because eventually the line will be mature and they'll be great. I think the thing that he was unprepared for was the transfer portal and NIL and that part of recruiting. I don't think he was ready to have the line shifting around every year and having so many moving parts. The other mistake I think he made because of that, trying to make it work perfectly, or maybe Lincoln had something to do with this, Lincoln Riley, is that all the movement of positions I think really hurt USC. They brought in a lot of really good transfers, some four-star transfers. Some of those guys, several of them even went pro, and they didn't do that well at USC. But I think moving those positions made it really hard for them because, in my opinion, you need an O-line that's been together for at least 1 year. And you used to have four, at least four guys playing together. Maybe you have a new guy each year playing together 1 year, and then the next year is the year they dominate. It's very hard to bring in all these transfers every year, then have them switch positions to all new positions and expect them to do really well. The first year, he had some older guys. It was a more veteran offensive line. Maybe there was some transfers. I don't remember the specifics, but it was sort of just an overall more veteran offensive line, and there was some talent there. But then after that, I think that started changing. And then the other issue was, I don't think he was nearly as bad a recruiter as people think. I've done a list of this, and I'd have to go through who was recruited under him. But he actually recruited quite a few guys that were pretty coveted. Maybe not a lot of huge five-star guys, but quite a few four-star guys. So I don't think his recruiting was really that bad. I don't think he was a great recruiter, but no one was really a great recruiter, and the reason was NIL. We didn't even have a high school NIL program, and therefore it was really hard to land big players because the numbers for those guys were so much better going to Oregon, Texas, Ohio State, and many other programs. I mean, we literally couldn't say to a five-star, hey, we can give you $100,000, much less a half a million or whatever the numbers were. So for them to recruit anybody anywhere on the team that was sort of a high-level player, it's hard to believe that they were able to do that. And I don't know why they didn't just get all quote unquote 3 stars. And that's because I do think we are better recruiters than we think we are. And now with NIL, you're seeing we are basically the top recruiter in the country. But I don't think everything changed. I know that we brought in a couple of new people, and I do think they're doing a great job. But I think NIL is a big part of that. So Henson, I don't know how good he really is, because he didn't show it. But I really think the real issue with him that he just was not ready for the transfer portal and having all those players moving around. That's not what he's old school, and he wasn't suited to that. Or I just misjudged him, and he was a mediocre offensive line coach. So I make mistakes too.
So, and you touched upon NIL stuff. I mean, you had kind of been very vocal right around this time last year, noting that USC had dramatically improved its NIL position. And then as time went on during the fall, you kind of said, yes, they have on a monetary basis, but there were still hangups internally in the program causing issues. And everything you said on that does track because essentially, those hangups, as they got sorted through, and we bring in now a general manager to kind of handle a lot of the negotiations for NIL, They seem to have been smoothed out, and we're actually seeing the monetary NIL, which you had talked about like a year ago, now really flourishing. I think for the on the offensive line piece, my big concern is that we had one guy, I mean, one guy who stuck around for the bowl game, which he didn't need to do. He could have declared to go to the NFL or just sat out otherwise, enter the portal before, and that's Pregnon. And he plays in the bowl game. It seems like, hey, this is great. He played very well in the run blocking in the bowl game. And clearly our maybe our best road grading type guard we've had in, maybe a decade. And I don't think he's all around offensive lineman as far as pass block, every aspect of the game, but for just driving the defender off the line on a run block, I think he's up, one of the top guys we've had certainly for the last 15 years. And then he basically just, I mean, gets poached right off our team to go to Oregon. Clearly there was a decision made that we were not going to meet his NIL expectations that Oregon had set, whatever way, however that happened. And yet a few months later, we're in a position where Oregon is not apparently in a position or doesn't want to meet some of the NIL numbers that we're throwing out for high school players. So, I mean, one question, I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think that if Chad Bowden had been in place in that time period back in December, that we don't lose Pregnon, that there would have been a different kind of negotiation and he sticks around? Do you think potentially Lincoln Riley was too cavalier in saying, oh, we don't really need him because we have these other transfers lined up to come in to take their place, like Wingfield from Purdue? What are your general thoughts about that whole situation?
From what I heard about Pregnon, and I loved Pregnon because he was a guy who came from Wyoming, and he got better. And that's one guy that did get a lot better. His first year at USC, he was pretty good, and then last year he was one of the few guys that could take on a Michigan defender and beat him, straight head to head, like a second round guy. And he said, "Let's." He went head to head, and he did really well. And a tremendous road grader, in my opinion. I don't remember analyzing his pass blocking too much. Maybe it was good, maybe it was average, maybe you looked at that. But I heard that he left because, first of all, his O-line coach, when an offensive line coach is leaving, that can be an issue. So there was a lot of that up in the air, and that's some of the part of the class didn't fall apart last year. We finished really strong, but a few of the guys with, our linebacker coach leaving, going to Fresno State, and some of that, we were honest with those guys. We're leaving, so they knew about some of these discussions, and they were talking to the coaches. So I think it was two things. Number one, I think he thought he might get better training at Oregon because they are a better program right now, and their offensive line is generally considered really good. Maybe more of a chance to win a national championship there. I didn't hear that it was the huge NIL thing. They may have come with sort of a ridiculous an offer, and I didn't hear the inner workings of what might have happened, which I kind of heard something to the fact that also he made a deal with USC and then maybe reneged on it a little, saying like, well, I know I said I would take this and my NIL is great with you, but they offered me $500,000 more. Even though your deal is great, I'm taking that. And so I think sometimes with Lincoln Riley, if you renege on a deal or if he feels like you're lacking character, he will walk away from you, especially if he's on the fence about maybe a player's character. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I give him credit for maybe sticking to his guns, but in the NIL era, you do sort of have to pay, and you have to figure out ways to get guys to be loyal, whether it's doing, 3-year contracts so they have to stay around. And you have to be a little bit careful about it because it will bite you, and it even bites Oregon, So and back to your point about Oregon this year, I don't think it's that Oregon can't compete because Phil Knight could just step in there and say, like, look, here's $1 billion. Maybe not that much. Maybe forget $1 billion. That would maybe really hurt his net worth. Here's $100 million. You have an extra $5 million per 20. Here's 20 players. Here's $5 million each. Anytime you have a problem, throw an extra million at them. But I think nobody is just going to give every bit of their net worth away for players because are they really going to be that much better? Someone who demands multiple millions per year? I don't know. They're going to be making more than the coaches pretty soon. So you kind of have to set your limits, especially if you've already made deals and someone's decided on, look, here's a 3-year deal for $3 million. This is the best you ever have. And then if they use it to leverage it against you again, you say that you know that they'll do that again and they'll leave your program no matter what in a year from now. So sometimes you just cut ties with that player. I didn't hear anything horrible about Pregnon other than the fact that he liked Oregon. He thought it had maybe a better chance to win a national championship and maybe he'd get some better coaching there and those kinds of things. And I think his NIL package, they kind of came through and said, hey, and they sweetened the pot. So maybe they did, and then maybe we didn't want to match her. Maybe the funding did run out a little bit. I don't remember that particular situation, even though I do hear from people who deal with NIL at USC, but we lost him, and that's that. And that really did hurt. Could take you from a good O-line, a really good O-line, to maybe an average O-line next year. So, but we have to move on.
Yeah, and I think, look, I don't really mind. I mean, it seemed to me they're conscious decisions after last season made by Lincoln Riley that he did not want to pay top dollar for four wide receivers. And as a result of that, we essentially let guys like Deuce Robinson and Zach Branch move on. And we also let, the running back from Texas move on, even though he would have been kind of scheduled slated to start. That was a situation I think where Texas Tech even stepped in and paid qu quite a bit of money for him. Remember that's the rumors. That and then I'm talking about oh gosh, I can't remember his name.
I know who you're talking about. Hold on one second. I was just looking up another
Yeah, Quentin Joyner.
that's on my big board here. Hold on one
Yeah,
second.
so Quentin Joyner.
Yeah, Quentin Joyner. Yeah, I know I pretty much heard what exactly what happened with him, but if you
Yeah, you go
hear
ahead,
it.
take it.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley was at a point where he was fed up with certain things, and apparently Quentin Joyner had been a nothing personal to him at all, but this is just what I heard. I wasn't there. I didn't see it firsthand. He was a problem in practice. He either wasn't showing up on time sometimes, wasn't trying that hard in practice, and also was an issue. There was an issue with him on the team where he sort of felt like he should be playing way more and starting, even though the last two running backs, as we've had, have been great players. They've been both of them were drafted, which to me makes them great players. They were both very experienced. They were older. They were versatile. They had had
Yeah.
success before, and they came in. One thing I will say about our running game, they did come in, and for the limited carries they got, they absolutely produced, and they were kind of in some ways like our offensive MVPs. Without those two guys that we had in the last couple of years, we wouldn't have been as good. Those were really good
Yeah,
players.
Marshawn Lloyd and Woody Marks.
Yes, I was a big fan of both of those guys. They both also ran NFL. They had NFL numbers in the ballpark of the 4-5 type speed. They're both a little bit different players, but very versatile, great college players, awesome teammates. Kept their mouth shut and just kept working and stuff. Really good guys. And so he was causing some rifts apparently on the team. I don't know exactly the extent of it. And then he came in and sort of said, like, look, I am like a super high level back and I want a massive amount of money. And Lincoln Riley didn't want to do it. He just said, look, you have to have a, if you want to get paid like a 4-star or a 5-star type player or, an elite player, you have to have a year, give me 1,000 yards and then we'll do it. But right now, we love you and everything like that, but we already recruited you. And so he didn't want to do that. And also, I believe that Joyner was having his agent. They said, let's have a meeting and talk. And we don't want your cousin, who's your agent, or I don't know if it was his cousin or not, but something like that. Somebody who's not an experienced person coming in there and dealing for you. We want to talk to you directly. Maybe you can have your agent, if you want to call it that, sit in, but let's talk about it and we'll see where we go. And he just kept sending his like agent. And so they eventually didn't want to take the phone calls. Whether that's right or wrong, that's, an opinion. I wasn't there, so I don't know. But they didn't mind letting him go because he wanted 4 and 5 star money, which he probably hadn't earned, especially for someone that they were a little unsure of based on some character issues.
Yeah, I'll just say also, I mean, I think he was one of the guys who, whatever was going on with social media, he was actually like social media was appearing on his timeline, like during games. I'm sure he wasn't doing that himself, but like there were definitely times where he was using his phone in the locker room during games, like during halftime, and got pictures out, and those were finding themselves on social media. And then separately, I really think just from playing style, he has some ball security issues. He made me nervous. Every time he got the ball, he made me nervous and thinking that he was going to fumble. I realized he didn't have, that many turnovers, but the ball was always seemed to be slipping and sliding out of his hands. And that just concerned me a little bit. I did not mind losing him. Running back is a position where, you can substitute guy, unless you find someone truly elite. There's a lot of substitute players there. I'm hoping the guys we've brought in and the guys we have returning will be able to make up for that. At the receiver position, to me, losing Branch, I think what happened with, you see this sometimes with lighter guys that, they come in, they run freely, they look great, and then they get hit a couple times, and then they never really run as freely again. They're always kind of protecting themselves, and that's something that like separates like a guy like Reggie Bush, who, in the college level, he always ran freely. He never felt like he had to protect himself extra. He could just go out there and run. But a guy like Lorenzo Booker, this is going back a long, long time. And when he went to Florida State, he after a while he was not running at full speed on every play. He could protect himself, and that's why you weren't seeing the big gains that he had in high school. Branch, I think that he'd become a victim of that. I don't know. We'll see if he ever progresses, gets back to what he was previously. But clearly, I mean, he was not the same player this past season. I don't know if he still had lingering injury issues. I'm just not sure. As far as
Yeah.
Juice, go
Go
ahead.
ahead. You finish. Sorry.
Well, you can talk about Branch because I was going to talk about Juice Robinson. Go ahead with Branch.
Branch, I couldn't figure it out with him, and I didn't really hear that much because no one really knew. He just, the way I've described it to you and everyone probably online, is that he looked like first year he looked like a 10-300 guy or a 4-3 type 40 guy, and he also had the hips and the ability to change direction like a Reggie Bush. And maybe even faster or just as fast. And then the next year, he looked like a 4.55 guy and a 10.900 guy, and not a slow guy. He'd get out there in the open and do a little bit, but he couldn't seem to outrun guys. And maybe you're right. Maybe he was tentative, or he had nagging injuries, or gained weight, or I don't know why somebody loses their speed, but it does happen when you get injured and things like that. So, I mean, Ralique Brown was a great example. I really liked him. I still do like him. But when he was healthy and running well and in great shape, he looked like, oh, this guy's like a 10-600 guy or, a legit 4-4 guy. When he was coming back from injury and hadn't played for a long time, he looked like a 4-6 guy and a guy who changes direction more like a safety versus an elite corner. So he was never like had the long speed of a taller guy, but in a short area quickness was amazing. And his change of direction, he had the great moves. And he's a guy that you thought could be, I don't know, something maybe like Darren Sproles, although Sproles could run, really run. But he looked like he had some of that in him, a lot of it, and all great moves. But without the speed and with the injuries, he kind of went from a what I would call a high 4-star player in my book to a 2-star player, and I don't think he's even playing very much because he's has these nagging injuries, even at ASU. I do think he made a little bit of a mistake, Ralique, by the way, in wanting to play running back because 170 pounds doesn't probably get it done anymore. I don't, and then Branch back to him. I just don't know what happened to him. And then same thing with him. And yes, I agree with you 100% on Deuce. Both of those guys thought like, hey, I'm worth millions of dollars. And other people knew that those guys were huge in high school, the best recruits ever. And so they're willing to take a chance on them. And one of them could turn out to be a first rounder. We don't know, but I think Riley viewed them as guys that were good players, but he maybe didn't think they were as good as they think they are, but hey, if they can get an extra 500,000 somewhere else or get a better deal or get 80 catches versus 40 catches a year, they kind of have to do what's in their interest as well. I liked both the players. I mean, they were USC guys. They loved USC all along. But, NIL and playing time does change that, and that's the world we're living in.
Yeah, and look, I just think that like if you need to make a business decision from if you're in living in this world of NIL and internal caps on how much total dollars you actually have available, you need to make business decisions and deciding, hey, we can't spend this much money on the wide receiver position, is a business decision that I support. I like Deuce. I would have thought of him as a far more valuable piece on offense as far as from an NIL standpoint if he played tight end, but he doesn't. He's a receiver and going straight ahead, straight downfield, he's as elite as they come. He has long strider, long speed that you really it is hard to match, but he when he needs to break off routes, his catch rate, everything about him as a receiver, when he had to break off routes and make cuts, everything gets worse. His drop rate goes up. His completion rate goes down. He's covered more. He doesn't get open as much. It's just he's not the same player. And unfortunately, if you're that much of a specialized wide receiver, I know a guy who used to call them hood ornaments. Where basically you can't do everything. You're highly specialized at doing certain things. And I like Deuce Roberts. Nothing taking away from him. But I think what we expected coming out of high school was a guy who's going to play tight end and get open all over the field. Cut up the middle of the field. Really do damage to defenses. And what we got instead was a guy that really. You throw him on, he just runs a streak down the field and you throw the ball deep to him. But otherwise, he's not going to make a huge impact on the game. And that's unfortunate. But look, maybe he'll improve. I'm not saying he can't. And he's elite at what he does. But for us to spend the dollars on something like that when we have two other receivers who really can be every down receivers and do most things you need to do on the field, it's to me it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, I like Deuce too. I thought you're right, specialized. I like throwing him. I don't even like fade passes, but I'll throw him a fade pass all day, and I will throw the ball up for grabs for him when I need to. And I'll also throw him those streak passes, or he can run posts and post corner type routes and things like that. And he's effective because defensive backs are rarely over 6'3". A lot of them, he's up against 5'8" to guys who are 6'2", and even a 6'2" guy versus a 6'6" guy with longer arms, longer fingers, you're talking 7'9", 10, 11 inches difference sometimes. It's just not even fair. And he's a big body, but he was originally recruited as a tight end because he was like 215 as a freshman, but he never really got any bigger. And everyone was so excited to land a five-star, but he was never really rated as a five-star wideout. He was rated as a guy who was very fast tight end. And he's gonna learn to block because he's got a huge frame. But he just is one of those guys that I always talk about that matured and was a full-grown man by a sophomore in high school, where some guys, they're not to their full height and their full weight until much, much later. And even at USC, I think he was 215 or some 210 his first year, and 215, he never seemed to get any bigger. He certainly never got to the one listed weight we saw out of high school a lot, which was 225. So I don't know where that came from, even though you would think 225, oh, he's going to be a 260 pounder in 6 years or something. He's going to be a big guy in the pros, but he doesn't have that. And I would agree with everything you said on him. Could he develop and get better? Could he work on the change of direction and the route running? Yes, of course, but he jumped ship quickly because somebody else maybe wanted maybe the tallest wide receiver in the country.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about who we do have, obviously, at wide receiver. I'm not even sure how much there is to say about Jacoby Lane or Mekhi Lemon because anyone listening to this is going to have seen these guys play many times. You're going to know how good these guys are. I mean, maybe they're not the number one combo in the country, but they're going to be in the discussion. I mean, there's no, if you're going to have a discussion on who's the best pair of wide receivers, these guys are going to be in that discussion. They might not be the, you might not say they're the number one combo. You might even see they're not the number one combo in the Big Ten because of Ohio State. But any discussion you have to include these guys for sure. But this is Lincoln Riley, and he is a pass happy offensive coordinator, increasingly pass happy every season, it seems like, and increasingly likely to spread the ball around to multiple receivers. I think he's trying to cut back on that, try to get more receptions for Lane and Lemon. But there's going to other guys are going to be getting the ball. So maybe, where do you, what are your thoughts on the, other receivers and tight ends to get to the ball this upcoming season?
I think we have a huge advantage this year, even though I would say the depth doesn't look as good. We don't have as many of the massive recruits that are old enough to really play. But the first two guys are really, really good. It's a nice combo of a small guy who's really quick and incredibly elite in the open field. I'm not even sure who to compare him to. He's just got magic.
You know who he reminds me of a lot is Golden Tate for Notre Dame.
And I think he's even a notch better than that,
Yeah,
actually.
potentially,
He's
but he might
got
be
like a
better.
little bit more. Golden Tate was a guy to me who was a little bit limited in skills. And when I say that, I mean compared to great NFL wide receivers or something. A little bit limited, but like he made the most of like who he was. And he was a very, very good player. And obviously, anybody who plays in the NFL, come on, you can play. So he's got not just moves like a lot of guys have, he's got this savvy with the vision. And the unusual cuts that you're like, oh, I've never actually seen that move before. And just a tremendous savvy. He runs hard and his speed's a little underrated. He was originally, as you remember, rated as a 5-star by some of the services. And then I know it switched at one point to a 4-star because maybe he tested out at like a 4.45 40 and not a 4.2 or some ridiculous number. And he was maybe a 10.700, even though I don't know if he ran track and not a 10.300. But you don't always have to have the top numbers, or you don't have to be 6'5". You just have to be able to play, and he's got enough genetics to get it done. And his quickness is pretty darn elite, So I love him a lot. I mean, he's one of the guys I'm more excited about him than I don't know anybody for a long time.
Yeah, I
Maybe
mean,
Hunter.
look, he could put, to me, you could put him at running back and he'd be potentially an All-American candidate. I mean, that's how good I think a runner he is.
Yeah, he's savvy. He'd get a yard when he should have lost four, and he's like a guy that doesn't lose yardage. And man, those kickoff returns too. And I was worrying, like, how fast is he? I saw him break out on several kick returns and just blowing right by guys. So he showed, at least on the college level, the guy he reminds me of is the receiver and the punt returner that went to Utah, that tiny guy. You ever heard of a guy named Britton Covey? Phenomenal college player, smaller too than Lemon, and he's in the pros as mostly as a kick returner, but he kind of reminds me of him. But that's my one comparison for him. And I think that player, I think Britton was a great player too, and I think he's at 165 pounds. I think he's still in the NFL, which is really amazing. So Lemon's got that, and he's probably a little bit bigger than Britton Covey. So looking forward to him. Lane reminds me maybe of Mike Williams, but a skinny version of Mike Williams, or Dwayne Jarrett
I mean,
plucks
more
the
like
ball.
Dwayne Jarrett, I'd say.
Plucks the ball out of the air. Maybe Dwayne Jarrett because the power is probably not. I mean, Mike
Yeah,
Williams.
Mike Williams was so big. I mean, I
He's a
remember
tight end.
standing next to that guy. He was like 245 pounds. It was crazy.
Something about the way he goes up for the ball kind of reminds me of like, hey, look, I can catch with one hand, but Jarrett did that too, other big receivers. So whatever you want to call it, just sort of the way he runs or something, his sort of savvy reminded me a little bit of Mike Williams. But I mean, he looks like he's had confidence ever since going back to his freshman year. Doesn't seem to play nervous, plays with a lot of confidence. And looks like he's developing into some of those Drake Londons and Pittmans that we've had in the past. Like, sort of like, hey, I'm the best receiver in the country, or at least I think I am, and I'm going to play like that. So he's kind of has a man amongst boys attitude as well. And he's got swagger and he plays with it. And I don't know where he'll get drafted, but he's not super, super fast, but he makes things happen. And it's a nice to have that kind of change. You got the smaller guy with the moves, and then the bigger guy that's got the savvy and can is just a playmaker. And same thing. The thing about him, he's not fast. The other thing is, but he can really jump. I think he's got in the vertical, I think it's in the 40s or something. Did you hear that somewhere as well? Or am I
I'm
making that?
not, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know if I've heard that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I know they've said his vertical is ridiculous. And you've seen that on a few of those fade passes. He goes right up above the 6 foot guy, covering him, and it just doesn't even look fair. And he's getting bigger too, it's a good problem to have to be lean, I would say, versus being overweight. So he's amazing. It's the thing that I like about the team this year. You don't see a ton of experience in the second team at wide receiver, but what I'm hoping I see happen is the freshmen. I've been talking a lot about this lately. They recruited a whole bunch of guys in the team that ran great 100 meter dashes, and these are some of the guys in the team next year running in the 10.2 to 10.75 range, several guys, and a bunch of those guys are on offense. We have Sims and Tanook Hines. Both those guys are very fast. I don't remember the times on those, but they're fast, and I hope they can get out there, play a little, and be decoys. I think, believe it or not, USC, if we play a lot of our younger players, at least get them on the field and are there for decoys, I think we'll have one of the faster teams actually in the entire country in terms of the amount of guys that can at least run 100 meter dashes with sub 10.7 speed, which I don't know. Maybe Ohio State has more, but I looked this up and I was surprised at how many people had verified times. And I was like, my gosh, this reminds me of an Ohio State or an Alabama team where everyone's a track athlete. So I'd like to see those guys play a lot. Will the other guys step up? I don't know. I'm not quite as excited about the other players, but they could be working. Jay Fair, maybe he'll improve. He's experienced. Maybe he can do some damage. I don't know about Jaden Richardson. He came from a small program. I think it was Tufts University, and he was dominant there, but that's Division III. Xavier Jordan, we haven't heard anything much about him. Even me, I don't hear too much about him. He was a pretty big recruit, but
He was a big recruit, and he actually he played in the spring game last year and had a couple really nice catches and moved really well. I was surprised that he was, you know, they ended up redshirting this past season. I guess that happens, but I think he was a top 150 recruit, and at the wide receiver position. So it surprised me that he, you know, especially watching it from the spring game, from I'm not talking about the 25 spring game, I'm talking about the because we didn't have one, but the 2024 spring game, we didn't really get anything from him.
I don't know that much about, by the way, about French. Does his last name go by Strachan or Strachan?
I was thinking of Strahan, but I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't talked to him too much about him, really, very much. I know he was a decent player at Boise. They say he just started playing football a few years ago. So, and I will take kind of Riley's word for it with recruiting like receivers and people like that. If he thinks he can play, he can probably play. He's kind of penciled in as a starter, at least with Phil Steele, which he doesn't know everything, obviously. But in the depth chart and Our Lads and other places, and he seemed to get a lot of press as being a guy who's going to play a lot. He's another big guy who hasn't played very much. I don't know. And then the other guy that's interesting to me is Zacharias Williams. He was the guy who came in the transfer where he was going to sign with USC in the previous class or whatever it was, and didn't, we kind of offered him really late and figured, oh my gosh, this guy is actually really good, and we have room for him and we need him. We should have taken him all along, but they didn't. But then I guess Riley stayed in touch with him and said, knows how good he is, and brought him in. So, he might be a surprise guy that makes some noise. And I think he's a guy that Riley definitely wanted because we have more guys that we can get now easily. We can get these bigger 4 and 5 star type guys a lot easier. But he wanted him. So that's a good sign. So I'm just hoping maybe one of those two or one of those three steps up. And I'd love to see the speed those young speedy guys get on the field. Romero Eisen is another guy who's a very fast player, where he looked really fast as a senior. And I know Georgia was after him a lot, I think, at the end of the year. I think Penn State really wanted him. He kind of went, in my opinion, what I would call from sort of like a high 3 star to maybe more of like a 4 star or better, and kind of one of those guys that might develop and you'd never even heard of him, and he turns into a Mekhi Lemon eventually. We don't know that, but from what I know about his recruiting, it's sort of that's what was sort of thought of him. I'm always happy when other powerhouses really want you and I get you as and you're on my team. I'm always very happy about it. So that's what I would say about him. So overall, I feel good about it. And Riley's receivers usually get open anyway. So I think we'll have a good year. And that first team does look pretty dominant.
The one guy I like really from these group of freshmen, the guy I watched this film the other night who I really like it, and I really it was totally off my radar was Corey Sims. So I'm curious about him. He's a little bit bigger of a guy compared to some of the kind of the just this more of the speed guys. I think he they list him at 6'3". I don't know if he's actually 6'3", 205, but he's got really good frame for receiver on him. Put up really good numbers in high school, beat the guys that were trying to guard him. And I am curious to see if he can get on the field early. I just, it's hard to say because all these guys, you have all these freshmen who have not played any real college football. And, to add to the list, you have Prince Strachan or whatever. Who has played, but like he's been playing in a program that's heavily focused on running the ball.
Right.
So yeah, I'm very curious to see how this all comes together, especially with a an office coordinator like Lincoln Riley. Okay, well, we're saying there's a lot of stuff going on in this podcast, so I'm thinking we're going to just limit this today to offense only.
Sure.
Before we get to the running backs, let's talk a little bit more about the offensive line, which we started with. We have the transfers. DJ Wingfield came in from Purdue. Jonre Reed, I think that's how you pronounce his first name,
Yep.
came in from Syracuse. I'm not sure either one of them were like pro football focus all-stars.
Right.
I'm curious how they're going to, perform. And then, we have Paige, we have Noah, we have Raymond. What are your thoughts on how this is going to shake out with this offensive line?
Usually, I would say that I don't have a definite opinion on like this is how good the line's going to be. But in this case, it's a really big question mark. After I did spend a lot of time analyzing what I thought of these players over a long period of time and even recently, I do like the line. I'm just not sure if it can be elite or not. It also comes down to the coaching. Can Hansen take these guys and turn them into a high-level line? Is he a top three, top five offensive line coach? Is he one of the best in the country? Is he an average offensive line coach? Is he a bad? I don't think he's bad. If you look at his track record at his previous stop, I believe he put a lot of guys in first, second, and third team all conference. So he has a short but really good track record, I'd say. In fact, he put two guys into the pros from a small school, which to me is really, really impressive. So I err on the side that he is a very good, maybe even a great offensive line coach, but it's an unknown. So the coaching matters because if you have a great coach, you can be Iowa and run the ball on practically everyone. And you might have all sort of what we call 3 star offensive linemen, but you kind of turn them into 4 stars because you are a great coach. So I'm hoping he is like that and he can take our threes and fours and turn them into, if you want to call it, fours and fives. But I'm just not 100% sure. As far as the players go, I would say just what you said. I don't think these guys are like probably first rounders, and they weren't thought of as even first, second, or third rounders last year. I think they were like more like seventh round free agent type guys. Maybe they could make it. I do think they're both very, very experienced, have played a lot, are good players, and I would kind of characterize them as sort of maybe 3 star ability guys with 5 star attitude, four or 5 star work ethic, and 4 and 5 star kind of experience. So what does that mean? That means you're a good player when you're a fourth, fifth, sixth year type senior. You're good. Are you going to dominate against Alabama and Ohio State's defensive line? Maybe not, but you might not get destroyed either. You might be able to hold your own. Why? You played forever. That's a sophomore 5 star you're playing against when you're playing against Ohio State. Yes, the genetics are better for that player, but you have been playing forever, and experience does count. A lot of guys leave and go pro early and all those kinds of things. So if you're one of those older guy who's fourth, fifth, 6 years in a program, been starting for multiple years, you're going to be a good player for sure. Could you be great? Sure, if you have maybe one of the better offensive line coaches in the country, scheme and all those other things. So I kind of characterize our entire offensive line this year as what I call a sort of high three-star, low four-star offensive line. You know, as you know, I have my own kind of rating system that I use. So that's what I think about. I know for a fact that Wingfield is a guy they really like at USC. So I think they think he's a guy that might be able to play pro. So that's what I would just say. From what I know about what the coaches say, I don't know the situation with Reed exactly, but he is very experienced and has started a lot, so that's a bonus. New system though, will he adjust right away? It's an unknown. As far as the other guys like Noah, you know, you talked about Noah. We also talked about Paige. Everyone's really high on those two guys because they were guys that we definitely absolutely wanted out of high school, no doubt about it. They're good guys. They're good players, but they had a lot of problems early last year. Both of them did. They both improved. Paige really improved. Went from, I hate to say it, being you know, not being the greatest player, if you want to put it that way, to being a pretty good player by the end of the year. Noah also improved, and he went from having a lot of problems, both of them pass blocking, to being better at it at the end of the year. I thought the improvement with Paige was even better, but they did show signs, and I know that they're liked. So with good coaching, I think they can be really good. Another unknown is Raymond. Raymond was a project that was they felt like just wasn't developed yet. And I think he was like 6'6", 6'7", and was like 255, 260 when they first saw him. And they said, this guy's going to be 325 someday. He moves really well. He doesn't know that much about football. And this guy could be, a really great player at some point. And he's taken a starting spot, and he's relatively young, so and doesn't, you know, hasn't played forever. So I'm optimistic about him, but he is in a battle with Justin, if I can pronounce it right. I believe it's like Tawanu. I think I pronounced that right. And he's a pretty good player too, but nobody has really lit anything on fire as far as the PFF goes, on the year or, for a few games here and there. So a lot of question marks with it. Can Hansen get the offensive line to come together really, really quickly? Your guess is as good as mine. I'm going to err on the side of optimism. Lincoln Riley did hire him. He had a budget to hire just about anybody. He's using his budget really well for all kinds of things. So I'm hoping it's a case of good judgment and saying like this guy is a beast of an offensive line coach, and these guys were undervalued out of high school, and they are really higher level players. But I'm going to call it a high three-star, low four-star offensive line, and we're going to have to see how do they do against Michigan, how do they do on the road at Notre Dame, how do they do in any away game at distance, how do they do at Oregon? Can they at least hold their own? I'm not really sure, but I'm hoping they design a system that at least highlights what they do best. You know, and if they're not great at pass blocking, maybe we'll have to run block all day. So that's another question mark. Can this be the first USC team that run blocks really well under Lincoln Riley? And because if we can't do that and let these, I love the backs that we have, if we can't do that, you know, it's not going to work. You know, so that's the area that of my biggest concern on the whole team.
What are your thoughts about the tight end position? Because, Lake McCree potentially is, he's coming back for his redshirt senior year. Not the most productive guy. Lincoln Riley seems to love him, throws him the ball quite a bit in positions where I don't think he should be throwing him the ball. And then we have all these kind of like four-star tight end behind him, Walker Lyons, Walter Matthews. He really didn't even see the field last season. He's now redshirted, and neither did Joey Olsen up from Oregon. To me, Matt, I know this is gonna, people are not gonna like to hear this. To me, Matthews, I think, should be an offensive lineman, but that's just my personal opinion. And what does that matter for? What are your thoughts?
I know you and I have talked about this too in the past about McCree. I like McCree more than probably most people. Most people don't like him because everyone likes a 4'6", 4'5" tight end who can run down the field and catch 70 passes and be like, and just be dominant. You know, like we've seen that lately at Michigan and Penn State. We've seen that over the years at Stanford, and we've seen it in Notre Dame. Big guys who can block and can catch the ball. These dominant guys that go first, second, third round. So yeah, I would like that too. But Lake McCree, I think, is a little bit better than people say. I definitely don't think he's super fast. He was kind of the only guy who could really block last year. I mean, they had a lot of young guys, so that's one thing. I think he was having a pretty good year pre-injury, even though his speed is not that great and he's not the best powerhouse blocker. I think he's a savvy guy who knows what he's doing. Do I think he's an All-American or a first-team All-League? No, but I think he has a shot maybe to be like an honorable mention All-League or something like that. And I do value guys who are in the program for a long time and really know the position. And I usually, those guys, when they stick it out long-term, barring another major injury, I think they'll have a really good year. So I think he'll have a good year. Is he going to wow anybody with an 80-yard catch? Probably not. Unlikely. But could he develop and become a better blocker and just become a little bit faster, just a little bit better at each thing and have a really good year overall? Yes, I think so. The guy that I really like as far as sort of, we'll call it the high-level genetics, and that kind of thing, is Walker Lyons. Walker Lyons was a huge recruit. People kind of forgot about him. I don't know why. Georgia really wanted him, and Georgia definitely knows tight ends. He runs well. He's not a 4-5 type guy, but he does run well. I believe he played some running back in high school. He's strong. He's powerful. He's one of those tight ends that's savvy in the open field, and he reminds me of one of those guys that I talked about from Stanford or Notre Dame, or one of those guys that's big, strong, good enough speed, powerful, savvy in the open field, fast enough, but not a 4-5, 4-6 tight end, maybe a 4-7 tight end, something like that. I don't know the exact numbers, but he was one of the best recruits in the country as far as tight ends go, and we got him, and he did take a year off, and he had some rust. But now he's in his second year and he's older. He's in his technically third year out of high school. So I'm expecting to see a good jump from him. And on paper, based on high school recruiting, he technically should be one of the better tight ends, in the league, if not the country, if you go by the way he was recruited by some of the best schools, including Georgia really liking him. And if Georgia likes him, I'm going to say that I like him. But I've seen some of the stuff he did on the field, and I saw a little bit of magic in that game. So I think it's somewhere in there. And we know his family can play football. I mean, his brother is maybe Lincoln Riley thinks his brother Ryder is the best quarterback in the country for next year. Technically the year after because of the mission. So those guys can play in that family, it looks like. But we'll see.
You have any thoughts of on Matthews or Olsen or Terabucci or any of those guys?
Yeah, I do. I do. So Matthews, I saw his film in high school. He was huge. He's still huge. He was big and kind of a man amongst boys, but it's not like the speed is. I'd want a little bit more speed out of him. He should be like a guy if he matches his size and be the best blocking tight end in the country or one of them. But freshmen, they don't do that much, so I don't know about him. He was recruited pretty heavily by a lot of schools, but remember, when you're like the biggest tight end in the country, people are just going to want you for your size. So I'm sort of, I would say that I'm not sold on him, but I'm not sold on him either. We'll see what happens. Olsen's another guy that had some production in high school and has some ability, and he was a receiver and a darn good, very large receiver in high school. Can he block? I always look at tight ends, can they block first and foremost? I don't know if he can block. I do think he can become a good pass catching tight end. That's what I would say about him. Todd Barachi is a guy that I love that doesn't seem to be developing because he's injury prone. I loved his film out of high school because he was a running back. He was very fast. At one of the combines, he ran a 4.57 in the 40. It showed up on his high school tape as you saw him run over players and around players and through players and all that. He was fast for a big guy who was about 215, 220 in high school. He's still about 220. He hasn't gained much weight for some reason, and he gets injured a ton. So, could he ever put it together and show that 4.6 speed? He did. He had the one play. Was it in this bowl or was it in the previous
No, the
bowl when he?
previous bowl against Louisville, yeah, it was like a one shining, what like a bolt of lightning that you never see strike again.
Yeah, I saw him out on the break. I was like, who's that big? What big wide? Is that Deuce Robinson? That big wide receiver is really fast. And it wasn't a big wide receiver. It was a tight end H-back. And I was like, oh my gosh, he looks like one of those guys that plays for Alabama who runs a 4.55. But he got out on that break and he was outrunning everybody except for maybe the corners. And I was really excited. And then he got injured again. I mean, he literally gets injured twice a year. I feel bad for the kid. Nobody wants to get injured. I do think he's a talent. Lincoln Riley definitely liked him out of high school and said he had a lot of potential. But some guys are just chronically injured. I'm hoping he turns into Chauncey Washington, meaning Chauncey Washington was a guy who came in, was injured constantly for the first few years. Everyone wrote him off, said he'll do nothing. I remember saying to people, hold off, this guy can really play. If he ever gets healthy, you are going to eat your words. And guess what? Chauncey Washington had 2 great years and actually played pro for like 5 years, even though he was injured a ton in the pros. Chauncey Washington was a great college football player. I don't know if Tabarachi can do that, but he has a lot of speed for being a big guy. So, and his high school film is excellent. So, I'll hold out hope and say that, miracles do happen and it can. So we'll just see where that goes. Do I like the tight end position next year better? Yes, of course I do. You have McCree, very experienced coming back. Walker Lyons, who's got some really has the genetics and he's in his 3rd year out of high school, 2nd year in the program should be better. Everybody, Olsen, Matthew's 2nd year, they've been in the program a couple of years. One of those guys has to be able to play like a 4-star this year. You can't recruit all these guys that are good to sort of great, or at least good, if not maybe even great players in high school, and not have one of them play. We'll go with the law of averages. So we're going to say somebody steps up and has a very good year. Maybe not all world like like some of the best tight ends that I quoted, but we're going to say we're going to have somebody who holds his own and can play against anybody and has a good year for us. So I don't worry about that. With all that depth, somebody's got to be able to play, right?
Okay, so elite, the last couple years, Lincoln Riley has dipped into the SEC to find very effective running backs. You touched upon that with Marshawn Lloyd, Woody Marks. Didn't do it this year. Instead, he's going to the Mountain West. He gets Eli Sanders, a completely different kind of back, really a burner type back. And then for core, more of the durable, every down back, it seems like he goes and gets this a junior college player. Who I think might have been committed to Mississippi State. I can't remember if where it was, Wayman Jordan.
Right.
Then we have, Brian Jackson's coming back. And we have some freshmen. Where are you with these running backs? Do you think this is a step up, big step down from last year? Where are you at with that?
I think it's about the same, I mean, the last two backs we had were extremely experienced and had played for bigger programs. So I would call those guys total proven commodities with NFL genetics and good attitudes. You can't go wrong. I mean, I'd love to have another one of those guaranteed backs coming back, but I like them a lot. I've watched some film on some of these guys. Wayman Jordan is he's fast, not as fast as Sanders, but he is fast. I don't know what he runs, but I'm going to say maybe around a 4.5. So he's got some really good speed, but where he's really good is that change of direction. But what I like about him is doesn't waste time. He makes one or two fast moves and then he goes. Excellent vision for a back. I really like that. And he's not just a one cut and go guy. He definitely has that shake and bake, but he doesn't waste time. He doesn't try to circle around the entire field and beat everyone with his speed. He sees the hole. He finds a seam and exploits it for everything it's worth. So he gets everything out of each play. And he's got pretty good long speed too, but those herky jerky moves, I would say his best attribute is that super quick lateral movement, which is ideal for any running back who's in space or even in traffic. You got to make the first guy miss. He can do that. And then he sprints as hard as he can to get the 4 yards, the 7, or if he breaks it long. So I really like him a lot. Sanders, I don't know if he's quite as skilled as Jordan, but if you give him good blocking, he's really fast. And so he's a good player. Both of those guys were really good guys coming from different situations. And I think they're really good. How do I compare it to last year? Maybe about the same. I mean, the other guy, Jordan, was also, I believe, the number one JUCO running back. Was he even the number one player in JUCO, or is just the number one running back, right?
He was named Offensive Player of the Year for Division One JUCO.
Yeah. So that says something. Somebody likes him, not just, and Lincoln Riley likes him. And Lincoln Riley's pretty good at getting those guys, especially when you have the track record saying, look, I did my last two transfers. They're both in the pros. I mean, you should be able to get another guy of equal caliber. And with NIL and everything, I'm going to just say that those players are really good. And on film, they look like they can play at this level. You can kind of tell these guys are really fast. And they were dominating at their at their last stop, even though Sanders has had some different stops in different places, kind of went from somebody who wasn't doing much to becoming a really good player. But not everyone develops in the first year, do they? So I really like them. Brian Jackson is a guy that I've been high on since he was junior or sophomore in high school. You'll hear me. I'll harp on this all the time. If I like somebody, I'm going to tell people, I love this player. Please give him a few years. I do like him. He had an injury that prevented him from being like he was originally a massive recruit that everybody in the country wanted. Then he had a knee injury, and teams were like, a lot of the huge teams, not all of them, but were 50-50 on him. And then they weren't sure what's going to happen. And then, he came back and had a few games where he looked really good, but, not maybe quite as good as early on, because when you're coming back from injury, you're not always good right away. But I thought, like, he's young, one injury to his knee. It's not going to wreck his career because it's so rare. Lincoln still recruited him all along. He liked him a lot, and he's powerful and he's got good vision. I'll call him a poor man's Lendell White. Is what I would call him. I don't know. He's probably not going to be as good as Lendell White. I mean, Lendell White was just a beast, but I'm just going to call him. He's that kind of a player. He hits the hole. He's got decent speed. He might even be a little faster than Lendell White, but Lendell actually had decent speed. But boy, he is strong and powerful, and I like him. And in limited carries last year, he looked like an excellent back. Let's put it that way. He looked really good. Now he is running in sort of second team, third team mode because these other guys are dynamic in their own right. But he really is the number two back because he's the strong back. He's the power back on the team. So I think he'll get maybe the second most carries, but we'll see how Lincoln Riley wants to play it. And if he's not, then maybe the other two are just great backs and they're going to both go to the NFL. So I think we're pretty good in that department. Would I mind an extra guy? No, I wouldn't. But even if you get an injury, I think all three guys can play.
So let's finish it off with the $64 question, the quarterback position. Maybe the I can't I mean I cannot remember USC entering a season with a question mark at quarterback quite like this. And yet Miami looked like they were interested in poaching Jane Maiava off of our roster. The coaches fought to stop that from happening. I think this was unlike the previous years, couple years, the available quarterbacks in the transfer portal were just it just you just didn't have that big wealthy group of quarterbacks who were available. And you did have like a Carson Beck, but God knows how much was spent just to get him. It's not even clear how much of an upgrade he would have been on Maiava. Maiava looked absolutely terrible at times, and then other times he's come same game. He looks like the worst quarterback SC has had since Reggie Perry against Texas A&M, and then he comes back and the end of the game is looking like Carson Palmer. Would you know? And then we've obviously bring in the freshman from Centennial High School, Hassan Longstreet. Where are you with the quarterback position?
You probably know my feelings, and other people on the board definitely know my feelings. I wasn't exactly happy with the way things. I wasn't down with the way things happened last year. I didn't really like it. I understand the shortcomings of a guy like Miller Moss, but I still liked him, and I really wish he could have stayed. But where we are where we are, and I've never been against Jaden Maiava. Like, I want him to succeed as well. I'm an SC guy. He came in late. It's a hard situation. He was able to face some easier teams right at the end of the year and maybe made his record look a little bit better. But he was still like new, and it's his first time starting. And obviously, even though he benefited from a better O-line, it still wasn't great. He had some, just like all the quarterbacks other than Caleb Williams, he had some, some ups and downs and stuff. And sometimes he looked kind of fast running the ball, which we thought we'd get some more, spread and read option type stuff out of him. But in other times when defenses were fast, he didn't look very fast at all. He definitely has better speed than average, I would say. So I'm happy that he'll be able to do some running. And I think he's strong and powerful. And he's a bigger guy. I mean, he's a big guy. I will say that the arm strength isn't a question. Really, really strong, powerful arm. Can play in the NFL with his arm. But then can he read defenses and can he function within the offense? I'm just going to say probably he's going to have a much better year because it will be his second year. Kind of, he only started part of the year last year, but still, he's been here for a few years now, another year in the system. I think he'll be a lot better. How good? Does that mean first round? Does that mean seventh round? Does that mean free agent? I'm not sure. Lincoln Riley is great with practically every QB he ever has goes pro. Even Spencer Rattler would have gone pro under Lincoln Riley, and he did go pro when he went to South Carolina. And remember, he had trained for several years under Lincoln Riley, so Lincoln does get a little bit of the credit for that. Spencer Rattler was a good quarterback. He probably should have stayed another year, but he does wonders with quarterbacks, and he takes them whether they're five stars or no stars. Baker Mayfield, he takes them and he develops them and he knows how to recruit guys who do well. He doesn't make mistakes in that area very much at all. So I'm going to ride with him in that particular situation. I want him to run the ball more, but as far as quarterbacks go, he's really good at them and he knows how to make them better. So I'm going to say we're going to have a good year, and I'm going to say he moves Maiava into the late rounds getting drafted. I'm going to make a prediction. I'm not going to say he's going to be a first round talent, but I'm going to say he's going to move into a position where he shows some signs that he could be a pro, and he's going to move into the late rounds this year and have a very, very good year. But, maybe not great, but very good. So that's what I kind of think of him, but I'm just not 100% sure because Maiava's play has been really up and down. So we don't have enough of a sample. His numbers and what he did at UNLV were really good, but that's lesser competition. It's not the same as playing Michigan and having a defense like that, or Penn State, or and these Notre Dame. These are teams that can play practically with anybody. They can play with anyone, and they know how to play defense. You need to be a first rounder if you're going to dominate those teams. So we'll see. We've got tests at Notre Dame, any road game, like I said, Oregon, places like that. Even at Illinois is a tough game. So can he come out and dominate? And I did like what I saw at certain times from him. And I liked Lincoln's play calling with him. Got him out on a couple of runs and a couple of quick plays that he made towards the end of the year. And he showed flashes of a guy that could turn into a guy who's draftable. Let's put it that way.
I think he, I do actually think the teams he played against were pretty good defense. I think, the defense the advantage that he had over Moss was the offensive line was more seasoned as when he took over, and
Yes.
he didn't have to leave the West Coast. I mean, he started four games, two of them were the Coliseum, one was at the Rose Bowl, one was in Vegas. So that's an advantage. You didn't have to travel across the country. Moss had the problem, Moss he has to do these road games at Minnesota, at Maryland. I mean, that Maryland loss to me, unfortunately, Maryland's only win in the Big Ten last year was beating us.
Wow. Wow.
That was a brutal, 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 brutal game, where we scored like four touchdowns, but like it's you can't lose to a team like that. And we don't, my office has not been tested outside of the region, so we just don't know exactly what would happen when he actually has to leave kind of that little bubble around Southern California and far south southwestern Nevada. But he did show signs at times that maybe he could potentially be the guy that you just discussed that could move into the late rounds. We'll just have to see about that. Do you have any thoughts on Longstreet?
Out of high school.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I think he's a little bit of a raw prospect that's got the genetics and the work ethic and all that. I mean, powerful arm, really good legs, you know, pretty savvy player, you know. I mean, it's hard to go. You take Clay like that, and he is a good player too. Maybe not the absolute most refined passer yet. But you put him under somebody who does really well with quarterbacks and shows him how to get the best out of his ability, and he turns into who is the quarterback for the Eagles right now?
Oh, Jalen Hurts.
I mean, Hurts, I'm not gonna lie. If somebody says you don't know anything about quarterbacks, I would agree with them in the way I thought of Hurts. When he played for Alabama, I said, "Wow, this is the best running back I've ever seen play quarterback. Boy, is he strong and fast. This guy could play tight end. He's massive. And boy, is he fast, and no one can tackle this guy. But boy, he cannot read defenses. He's not that good. And there are other quarterbacks on the roster that are better than him. And that kind of happened to him. And I never, ever thought he could go pro. I thought he was just a guy like Max Wittick. Powerful arm, strong, fast. Wittick wasn't probably as fast as him, but, you know, just really great genetics in certain areas. But it was not a good quarterback itself. And boy, did he prove me wrong. He turned into a great player, and now he's even in better. He's better in the pros than he even was when he went to Oklahoma. And I'm going to give that. I mean, I'll give some credit maybe because he was developed also under the greatest of all time. You know, Nick Saban's great with everybody. Everyone turns out well under him. And then he went to Lincoln Riley, and Lincoln Riley totally turned him around and turned him to a darn good passer. And I was completely wrong. I would bet you, if you'd given me a bet of $1 million, I'd say, no, you'll never make pro. And not only did he make the pros, he's not third string. He's a really good pro quarterback. So work ethic and maybe the coaching, or maybe I don't know what happened with him, but he's definitely a success story. And I'm happy to eat my words on something like that. I love it when somebody proves me wrong. He didn't show it early on, but boy, is he good. So if he can do it to somebody, I think higher as a passer of Maiava than I thought of Hurts. Let's put it that way. When Hurts was at Bama, that's what I think of Maiava. So if he can do that with that, Baker Mayfield, et cetera, he's going to be a good player. Longstreet, raw player who, God, oh gosh, all the genetics you'd ever want. So what is he going to be? I'm going to go out on a limb and call him a late first rounder right now.
Oh wow! Okay, well,
Yeah.
we'll see if he maybe look maybe he gets her. I just don't. I do not think at this point. I think next season would be interesting. I do not want. I you know fresh. Look, I know everyone. You know, Caleb Williams came in as a freshman, took over for Oklahoma. Yada yada yada.
Yeah.
I don't think that Longstreet is at that position right now. And
No.
historically, you know, other than like Trevor Lawrence, true freshman quarterbacks, really really struggle in college football.
Yes.
Jalen Hurts, just really briefly, you know, obviously he was replaced. He was replaced in the national championship game by Tua,
Yep.
and
Yep.
Tua had to lead and led a comeback to win the national. I mean, Alabama was getting killed in that game with Hurts. That season, Hurts threw 17 touchdown passes, averaged 8.2 yards per attempt. You know, when he gets this, just finally gets a season at Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley, obviously defenses aren't as good, but 11.3 yards per attempt, 32 touchdown passes, 70% completion. I mean, just wild. He actually threw in 2019 when he started Oklahoma, he almost threw for double the amount of yards he threw before at Alabama when he started that season when he brought it took him undefeated the entire season. Until, or I guess they lost one game, until getting, you know, that game against Georgia where,
Yeah.
you know, he gets replaced at halftime. So just a remarkable improvement. Okay. I think we're gonna have to do defense just another time. We'll talk about, if you have time, you know, we'll figure out a time to, for you to come back on if you'd like to and talk about
Yeah.
defense and maybe another time talk about just our schedule, our opponents, all those things. Any last words before we break?
No, you know, I just think it's going to be a really interesting year because to me, there's even more unknowns. There's so much hype around the program now. It almost seems like there's going to be 100 new five stars on the team this year. It's a little bit, remember, we're looking at we're so happy today, but we are gotta remember, we are looking at about 4 years from now before this like domination with those players that are 26 players. Literally 4, 5, 6 years from now, we're gonna be, maybe not six, but 4 years from now, 5 years from now is when we're gonna really be talking about how these are some of these guys are first team All-Americans, but the recruiting is getting better. That means the transfers will get better too. And I do think they maybe upgraded some of the situations, like with the coaches and stuff like that. They have more money, and I do think bringing in Chad Bowden's done wonders for the program and the morale. And let's just hope some of the newer coaches, Rob Ryan and people like that, are a notch better. I'm really excited about the defense more so than the offense. I actually think the defense this year could be one of the better ones, and I'm hoping for maybe a top 15, top 20 defense. Not top five, but I'm thinking we should be able to climb into the top 20 if everything goes well with all the changes we've made, and we've upgraded a lot of positions. But we'll see how it plays out. But I'm very excited about the defense, and particularly the depth on defense, I think it's a little bit better.
Yeah, and we'll get to that next time we talk. But a lot of the guys that we brought in the last couple of recruiting classes who we've been developing are actually on the defensive side, guys like Desmond Stevens and guys like Abasiri, potentially Carlin Jones. Those are guys we haven't really seen yet on defense. And I'm very curious about how did those, before we broke the bank on NIL, how are those guys going to end up turning out? Thank you so much, Upper West Side Trojan, and we will be back with another podcast. And I don't know if we'll talk football first or basketball first, but we'll be back. Thanks, everyone. Fight on.
Thank you.